Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Welcome to part one of Aftermath, Emergency Powers, a special interview with Dr. Joseph Farrell.
Joseph, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me back, Daniel.
Fantastic. A lot has happened since you were back on the program in November.
Yeah, you think?
As we know. You could say. And events keep picking up steam, and that's what we're going to start off with tonight, which is the speed, the rush to lock things down from the leadership level. Of course, it started in earnest with the COVID aspects earlier last spring, and now it's really gone into overdrive with the election and everything that followed. And now we have a new administration that has rolled in, and their big signature item, besides transgender bathrooms, apparently, is the domestic terror bill, which reminds me of another kind of emergency power that was executed back January 31st, 1933. And that was
the Ermächtigung Gesetz, the Enabling Act in,
yes,
in Nazi Germany. That is a crucial thing, because what people have to remember was that formally and legally, the Nazi regime was simply a continuation of the Weimar Republic. What the Enabling Act was, it was that act that gave Hitler and his Reich cabinet, the German government at the time, like the German government now, had a federal cabinet just like we do. Okay. Mm-hmm. What the Enabling Act did was it allowed Hitler and the Reich cabinet to legislate by decree. In effect, it gave him dictatorial powers. And it, in other words, the legislature voted to give its authority to the Chancellor of the Reich, who in effect, if you don't know what the Chancellor is in effect a prime minister, okay,
right,
separate from the President of the Reich. And one of the first things Hitler did under the Enabling Act, after President von Hindenburg died in 1935, was he consolidated the premiership, the chancellorship, with the presidency of the Reich, so that all functions of the state cohered in him. And then another crucial result of the Enabling Act, and I'm just waiting for this one to come through, Daniel, in this move to you know, make all of us deplorables domestic terrorists.
Right.
Is the change in the oath that the German armed forces took. Because under the Weimar Republic, the German military took an oath to defend the Reich, the Constitution, and its representatives. You know, rather similar type of oath to what our American military currently takes, you know, to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, you know.
Right.
What Hitler did after President von Hindenburg had died was he instituted a new oath. What Hitler did with the new oath, it read, Ich schwöre bei Gott, I swear by God, that I will execute my offices and so on and so forth, loyalty to the Oberbefehlshaber, the supreme commander of the German Wehrmacht, Adolf Hitler. So in other words, the oath was changed from an oath to the state or to the nation to a personal oath of fealty to Hitler himself. So in other words, and you have to know the German mentality for how huge a step that was. The Germans, you know, if you know anything about Germans, they are intensely loyal. I mean, their word is their bond. And that change of oath is highly significant because it consolidated even more power in a very specifically cultural way into Hitler himself. So I'm just waiting. You know, we've seen our, as you've pointed out, we've had our Reichstag fire with, you know, the storming of the Capitol and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And now we have this domestic terrorism bill, right, which looks to me, if not an American enabling act, at least a step in that direction. I mean, we've had Patriot Act and, you know, all of this stuff, and now even more is being consolidated in Washington, D.C. by the lying circus, which is now what I'm calling the American federal government.
Right.
You know, not to cast aspersions on the Red Baron and the flying circus, but you know. I think you're absolutely correct to view the Enabling Act as an ominous parallel to what we're seeing going on now. Absolutely.
It's fascinating because what we're seeing in a very short period, and mm-hmm. you know, the rush is on, as we say, but it was on with the Enabling Act in 1933 because yes. you've got basically a short period of time between the Reichstag fire and this Enabling yes. Act. It's like yes. a week, basically.
Yes.
And we know it was suspicious to start with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Professor Scott likes to call them deep events, mm-hmm. 9/11, the deep event, Watergate, the deep event, and how this invisible entity comes in, changes things, and then backs back out of the system, and that there's a huge policy shift.
Right.
That's how the American deep state has operated. This is very interesting because the entire election then becomes a deep event.
Right. And I think it was.
Yeah.
And the reason why I think it was is if you look at the evidence, and I don't care what the other side is saying, there's massive evidence of voting fraud and a stolen election. Mm-hmm. But the way they have parlayed that is that it's now the official narrative that nothing happened. I mean, or at least the quasi-official narrative right. from the media that nothing happened. So in other words, they're using the event to drill home the idea that we, the voters, are absolutely helpless to do anything to correct the situation in this country. And trust me, Daniel, that has me scared for one reason and one reason only, and that's the geopolitical fallout that's going to come from it.
Right.
Because we've just telegraphed to the world that our deep state is not even capable, you know, the Russians call it not agreement capable, okay? That we're not even capable of keeping our own political covenants with our own people.
Yes.
Now, do you, if you are the Chinese or the Russians or the French or whoever, do you want to do business with a nation state that's that out of control?
Definitely. It does. It shakes everything up.
Yeah. Yeah. The geopolitical fallout from this are going to be with us for years. Now, they're going to be successful in covering it up for a while because, you know, Mr. Globaloney is spread all over the world. Think of Mad Madam Merkel and her own recent version of the Enabling Act, incidentally, right. which, you know, says if you don't accept the COVID narrative and we're going to lock you down.
Yes.
Well, fortunately, some German state constitutional courts are overthrowing that. But, you know, courts can say whatever they wish. If they don't have the means to enforce what they're, you know, saying, then it's pointless. But Mr. Globaloney is going to play along with this new misadministration, the lying circus, mm-hmm. for quite some time. But behind the scenes, trust me, they know now that they are dealing with a rogue group of people in control of this country, and that no agreements that they reach with it are any good whatever. You know, it's like the German response to Belgian neutrality in World War I. It's a scrap of paper, you know.
Yes.
so do you if you're in India or you're a Japan, you know, two absolutely crucial American allies. If you're sitting in Tokyo, do you want to do business with this government? Do you want to rely on this government to defend your country?
Right. Definitely not.
Definitely not. You know, and we've seen signals of this coming, you know, from Japan, particularly in the past few years. And it's only going to increase. And the same thing with all of our other allies. It's only going to increase as a result of this stolen election.
Amazing. It is interesting to look at it from a variety of angles, because we're looking at it from the point of view of America, because, you know, we've just seen it, it's American election, and the aftermath of the 6th. And that being set up basically as the platform by which they can go in and remove free speech from the internet. They had already taken away President Trump's Twitter account, former President Trump. And but it was an amazing thing to do to a sitting president.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a line that was crossed. There was a line crossed during the election, which was Twitter censoring the New York Post Hunter Biden story. I thought, I thought if there has to be a look of something where, you know, it's a complete takedown of free speech, then that was the first shot across the bow that was just so obvious, and took things to a new level. There had been a lot of little levels along the way. Taking away the commander-in-chief's ability to speak, he's the guy who's in charge of the country's military, in the case of, you know, a nuclear attack or whatever it was, to remove his ability to communicate. Wow.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And if you're getting pushback on it from the likes of Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron, you know you may have committed a little overreach here, you know, because these people are hardly against your other agendas.
Right.
But the other thing that comes as a the other thing that comes as a consequence of this, as you say, is just before the doggerel inaugural, we heard this talk coming out from what's her name, the Speaker of the House. I can barely pronounce her name anymore.
Pelosi.
Well, I prefer to call her Pig Lucy, but anyway. There was all of this talk being bandied about, well, maybe we need to reconsider who has control of the nuclear football. Remember that?
Yes.
And they were saying, well, we may need to turn it over to a committee of some sort. Now, I'll tell you what I think is going on there. And again, I think it's the geopolitical fallout from this absolute farce of a presidential selection. And that is, Catherine thinks it's all about getting control of the American military to be the policing arm to bring in their one world digital global currency, which I grant you is a long-term goal.
Yes.
I'm not disagreeing with her. But I think that there's a much more fundamental short to mid-term geopolitical goal that they have in mind. And that is to keep any enemies that might be contemplating nuclear first strikes or whatever guessing as to who actually has control of the nuclear football. It's much harder to decapitate, you know, to launch a decapitation strike if you don't know who's got the button.
Wow.
Now,
yes.
The other concern I think they had is that President Bidenenko, you know, as I'm now liking to call him because of his Ukrainian connections, President Bidenenko is, I think it's evident to probably most of your listenership, it's certainly evident to most of mine, that he's not quite all there, you know. And I'm reminded of that little line from Dr. Strangelove when the president is calling the Russian premier and saying, well, one of our generals went a little funny in the head and launched all of his bombers against your country. You know? Dmitry, calm down, Dmitry. You know? So I'm thinking, okay, we've got a senile dotard who is a grifter and, you know, likes to smell children's hair and all of this. We've got this guy who's not all there in the White House, and I think they're all Pelosi and company are less afraid about Donald Trump doing something crazy with the nuclear football as they are Joe Biden.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're trying to come up with any way they can to wrest control of the nuclear forces of the country out of the executive hands. And trust me, if they're thinking about that with Joe Biden, they're probably thinking about it, too, in terms of Kamala. And the other reason I think they might be thinking this way is Biden's self-evident connections to China.
Yes.
You know, do you want essentially a Chinese agent of influence in the White House with his hand on the butt? I know I don't.
This is amazing because during the election, we saw Biden out there. He really could not put three words together. Uh-huh. And they kept him away from the press because it was embarrassing. Uh-huh. They souped him up. They hyped him up for the debates, but it got very rocky anyway. Uh-huh. And they threw the softball questions at him like, you know, will you help the poor?
Are you concerned?
Considering your great track record on the environment, sir.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
And we all know how they laid this out. But it is interesting to me because Pat Buchanan, the columnist, said, we have never had a more enfeebled president. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you know, if we go through the presidents, it's really true.
It is very true. It is very, not even Reagan, when he was clearly beginning to, you know, suffer the signs of elderly dementia. Not even Reagan was this bad.
Right.
I mean, this man is, you know, he looks like a shattered Tinker Toy construction. You know, we've got all of these pieces and shards of personality lying around that they have to occasionally scoop together, you know, when he goes on TV. And in fact, since we're talking about enfeebled, I saw a video that someone sent me, and I have no way to verify if it's true or not. None of us do. They can do anything with these videos now.
True.
But I suspect that it may be true. And the reason why is Biden is there at the Oval Office desk signing things, and he says, I don't know what it is I'm signing.
Yes.
You can hear him mumble this.
Yes.
And someone just says, oh, just go ahead and sign it. So in other words, this guy is a puppet.
Right.
You know, he didn't prepare those executive orders. They were all prepared for him, and he's just there to rubber stamp them. He doesn't even know what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're prepping the narrative there too.
Yes.
You know, yes. To bring in you know who.
It seems designed that way with Harris. Just, mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like even on their side, they have to acknowledge that his faculties aren't there.
Yeah, they're not.
Yeah, they're clearly not. It's fascinating. I went through the various presidencies, tried to find any comparable situation. I really couldn't. The only thing I could find that was in the ballpark maybe was Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Ford was younger and certainly more vital, but he hadn't been actually elected. He had been selected mm-hmm. VP after Agnew got out. And then when they took Nixon down, there he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were positioning him with VP Rockefeller, and there were all these attempts on his life to install yep. Rockefeller. This is what it feels like. It's got that feeling.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree.
And he was only president for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what it feels like. It's got a when we get into these two-term presidencies, Reagan's second term, you know, it was clear he was going to win because with the powers of the presidency, that's typically how it goes. Mm-hmm. Clinton had the power of the presidency into his second term, Bush and Obama. The only ones who didn't were Jimmy Carter, and who, you know, basically the deep state was really upset with at the end, and who had the Iran hostage crisis and all that. Anybody could have beat him. And then Bush, you know, who they needed to lay Clinton in there after 12 years of Bush-Reagan. So there's no real comparable piece in history. And when you remove a second term like that, it's almost like if I looked back to the 80s and I looked at the Reagan presidency, it's almost like if they installed Mondale there and just whoosh, that election. Yeah. You know, what kind of a weird, freak, upside-down world would we have had then?
Oh, totally. Totally. And while we're talking about messages and signals, I think it's highly significant that President and Mrs. Carter decided not to attend the inauguration.
Yes.
You know, they're elderly, certainly, and they do have some health problems, as we know. But that has not precluded President Carter from attending other inaugurations. And I definitely got the impression that that was a message, that he wanted nothing to do with it. And I don't blame him.
Well, he offered to go to North Korea last summer. So obviously he feels like he could still travel. Right. So it wasn't that. And I agree with you. He's someone who comes from a place of integrity, regardless of his politics.
Right.
And just like when he called out President Clinton for pardoning the embezzling billionaire Mark Rich.
Right.
So, you know, it is interesting. I think you're right on the money there with Carter. And Carter knows deep state action. He's witnessed it up close.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned the Iran hostage crisis. That was total deep state action, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the whole business of the October surprise, his national security advisor, Gary Sick, you recall, wrote that book shortly after Reagan got into office about the October surprise and how that was all engineered. Because, bang, Reagan got in, and within literally hours, Iran decided, oh, we're going to release, you know, the hostages. And the impression was created, well, Iran doesn't want to mess with Reagan, you know.
Right.
We're looking at the same thing now. Biden gets into office after his doggerel inaugural, and we have Iran announcing to the International Atomic Energy Regulatory Agency, whatever it's called, that we're going to go ahead and metallicize uranium. And I'm thinking, oh, and what do we need to do that for?
That was amazing. Yeah. That's like the second Trump got out. Let's talk about, for a moment, in lead up to all this, the unusual last days of President Trump in the office. And I think they were very unusual and extremely active. In November, he activated a very old National Security Action Memorandum, which had the Pentagon defunding by January 5th the Central Intelligence Agency, drone warfare, and all that kind of stuff. Starting January 5th, from the 5th to the 20th, that held. After Biden got in, we don't know what they're doing over there at the Pentagon now. I don't know how much of that is still in effect. But what an unusual thing to do.
Yeah, he was making all of these strange appointments that did not appear to be appointments that a typical lame duck president would make in the final days of office.
Right.
It was positively mystifying to me what he was up to, if anything. You know, was he just lashing out? Was he privy to something else? I don't know. And I'm not, don't get me wrong here, Daniel, I'm not subscribing to this last minute. I mean, the Q people are still going on about how he's still the president and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, holding out all these wild scenarios. I'm not in that camp at all. But nonetheless, you're right. What he was doing the last minutes in office made no sense to me.
Yes.
And they still make no sense to me. I can't figure out what was all of that about. And then, since we're on the topic, let's talk about the days immediately prior to the election. He was going on and on about the possibilities of election fraud and so on. So why, when it happened, were they not prepared for it?
Yes.
You know, what was that about?
Yeah.
And now we're hearing that, you know, he's down there in Mar-a-Lago and he's playing golf and blah, 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 and talking about setting up a Patriot Party and primarying all of these Republican turncoats.
I can see that.
I can see that too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there literally does appear to be some sort of wholesale assault on the man, with banks, denying his accounts and so on and so forth. You know, and that tells me that they're afraid still of something.
Yes.
And I don't even necessarily think they're afraid of him, you know, running for a second term.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're afraid of something else, and I don't know what it is.
This is fascinating. This is absolutely fascinating. And it's crossed my mind that, and you've said this all during Trump's presidency, which is the level of opposition. You know, we've seen presidents where they would oppose policies. You know, we've seen presidents go through, you know, Monica Lewinsky scandals and things like that. This was totally different. This was, we need to eradicate him, his name, the people who follow him, any mention of them. It's like scrubbing Moses out of the Egyptian
history. Out of the Bible. Yeah. Get rid of that. No, it's mystifying to me as well, Daniel, and I can't figure this out. Why all this global panic over one man and over one administration? And it's still going on. How in the name of sense do you impeach a former president? And they're going ahead with this.
Yes.
Now, my suspicion is that it's twofold. That, you know, they're stacking functions again, like Catherine Fitz likes to say. They are trying to make it impossible for him to run again. Which, you know, they might as well give up on that, because the man's got gobs of money.
Right.
So whether he runs again, he can be a factor in politics, whether they like it or not.
Yes.
So I'm thinking the second thing they're after is to establish a precedent for long-term use. In other words, I think they are trying to use this deep state action to create a precedent to emasculate the executive completely. And the key there is this nuclear football committee idea.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, what they're trying to set up, it looks to me, Daniel, is a Politburo.
Right. Right. And that is the classic Soviet setup, where they have the kind of puppet, the Chernenko style puppet, come out and run things while they're just pulling the strings in the background, and he's a figurehead.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like to me.
Wow. Yeah.
Because let's remember, the Politburo is not a office of the Soviet government. It is the high committee of the Communist Party.
Right.
So in other words, you're looking at an attempt to establish a party rule and to use that party rule to gain control of the final levers of power that so far have escaped it, namely the nuclear arsenal.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. That's a terrifying thought.
Yeah.
Put on the money. And I think that we saw unusual things in relation to nukes show up. You know, there was this BLM leader who was there at the deep event on the 6th at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
His presence was very unusual. But one of the things in digging into his background that came out was that his stepfather was a general, a high general,
mm-hmm.
and he was demoted as a result of mishandling nuclear weapons.
Yep. Yep.
The other thing was that the 26-year-old activist had done, you know, strange things like Uber commercials.
Mm-hmm.
So a very strange presence there in any case. Earlier, in this rush right after the election happened, when Trump was doing certain things, one of the women who resigned around the Nuclear Regulatory Committee, her job was the movement of nuclear weapons from facility to facility. So there was this arc of unusual incidents around that arsenal.
Well, let's go further in that exploration. Two incidents that I recall very well were the incident of bombers from Minot, North Dakota. Remember that one? Flying to Barksdale in Louisiana and carrying nuclear weapons that were not supposed to have been moved.
Wow.
Remember that one?
Yes. Incredible.
And then there was, I think it was General McChrystal, on Trump's April Fool's Day press conference, COVID press conference, where the first people that we're hearing from in that press conference last year were the Secretary of Defense and then this general who stood up and announced to the world that there were all of these military deployments in the Caribbean, remember?
Yes.
Including a deployment of troops. And they had the Coast Guard Admiral, it was the Navy and the Coast Guard that were deploying all of these resources to the Caribbean. And then the general said, repeated himself twice, you are not getting in. You are not getting in. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think that was just a drug interdiction drill.
Right.
I think maybe the concern was someone may have been trying to smuggle in a firecracker.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable.
So put it all together. You've got a nuclear football committee that they're talking about. Something's going on.
Wow. And this is weird, too. Down there in the hot zone, here are these, you know, warnings about, you know, we have more and more ships, more and more presence down there. It seemed like an unusual and inflammatory thing to say.
Oh, highly. Yeah. Highly. And to whom was that directed? He never said. He just said, you're not getting in.
Amazing.
You're not getting in. So to whom was that directed? We don't know.
Just before the Trump administration left, and this ties in with exactly what you just said, they once again put Cuba back on the terror list. State sponsor of terrorism. So again, there's something there around Cuba and the Caribbean, and it pops up over and over again. You know, we establish diplomatic relations with them, and our diplomats go down, and they all come back with these acoustic concussions.
Yes.
And so basically, they just fold the embassy. And then when these people come back, as you've pointed out, it's not just that they were harassed down there, but they're harassed when they come home.
Yes. Yes.
So
and the other problem here, Dan, well, the other problem here is, you know, we're both trying to read the tea leaves here and make connections, that there is something massive going on. The other massive thing is this business of Governor Abbott down in Texas trying to woo the NASDAQ data center.
Yes.
To Texas.
Unbelievable.
Now, these data centers for these exchanges, you know as well as I do, that most trading done on equities exchanges or commodities exchanges is being done by computerized algorithmic trading. So to move a data center from New York and New Jersey to Texas is basically like moving the exchange.
Yes.
So the question is, why the necessity to move the data centers for these exchanges, which are hooked up, you know, by fiber optics to the city of London, why are we moving them to Texas?
Right.
And the only thing I can think of is there's something going on down there that they need those data centers to be closer to. And New York City isn't going to serve the bill.
Interesting.
Add to that the fact that Governor Abbott said, "Well, we're not just talking with NASDAQ; we're talking with other exchanges." And I'm thinking, Chicago Board of Trade, New York Stock Exchange, Amex, you know, the whole nine yards. And then you've got the Texas State Bullion Depository. You've got South Carolina trying to pass a bill recognizing bullion coins, any bullion coins, as legal tender. And I'm thinking, what game is going on here?
Yes.
Because you're seeing some if you look carefully enough, you're seeing some serious pushback from states right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Very serious pushback.
Well, this is fascinating. The NASDAQ, this is it's located in New York, but it is international finance.
Right.
It's the heart of that. And to move the center of that, which has been established out of New York is the connection to international finance, to Texas represents such a shift.
Huge.
Yeah.
And let's go further. Someone emailed me, and I don't want to mention names, but one of my members emailed me outlining his background in telecommunications and so on, and pointed out to me that the servers in New York were owned by Verizon. The servers down in Texas are AT&T.
Interesting.
So is this corporate warfare going on? Who knows? I don't know. But when you tie all of this together, that comment by the general about the Caribbean, the bombs that were flown from Minot to Barksdale apparently without any sort of approval.
Right.
You got to wonder. And then, you know, toss in the nuclear football committee idea. You got to wonder what's going on. They are shuffling pieces on the board massively right in front of people's eyes, and no one's paying attention to it. And now we've got a senile dotard in charge of the lying circus. And, you know, that to me is all distraction.
Yes, absolutely. You make a really good point here too, which is that, you know, we often think of this as, you know, we see this, whether it's in Twitter and all the different social media and analysis on the alternative side, this political personality, drilling down, which is all well and good, but you just mentioned it, which is there are corporate forces that are acting as independent entities. I mean, Twitter has no political clout, technically. Zuckerberg doesn't have any political clout, technically. But here they are acting, and Gates himself. Yes. But they're acting with that authority of elected officials.
Yes. Yeah. And there's no constitutional check on them. You know, and this is a problem, Daniel, I've pointed out over and over and over and over again, and people have not, to my mind, really caught on to it yet. This idea of a corporation as a persona ficta in law, as a corporate person in law, is at the heart of the problem, because corporations in their corporate charters have absolutely no constitutional obligations. And to my mind, one way to possibly fix that is that corporate charters must include the Bill of Rights, or as I like to call them, the Bill of Afterthoughts, in their corporate charter.
Yes.
And if they violate those things, that charter is revoked.
Wow, absolutely. It's amazing because, as we know, and we're going to get into the free speech aspect being under attack here, because it is, I've never seen such an assault on it. And when you go back and you look at the 60s and the FBI assault on free speech and the pushback against it, these same leftist people who were so upset about that, the Noam Chomsky type people, they know. Yes. They've seen the movie, and now they realize, they're coming for us. Mm-hmm. They're not just coming. This is the interesting thing. They do want the populist Trump-style supporter. That's their number one person. You know, they're calling it white terror, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. You know, you got white terror, you got black terror, you got yellow terror. That's just the way it goes.
Well, listen, Daniel, it's so ridiculous now that some professor in the Ivy League, I think it was Harvard, some professor in the Ivy League has now coined the term multiracial whiteness. So it doesn't matter anymore if you're black. If you're acting white, you are, you know, whatever acting white means, you know.
You're a pale cisgender, don't you know?
Yeah. It's
that's part of that is the insanity, right? It's to flood and obfuscate what's actually going down by having people drill down into things that don't mean anything.
Right. It's a full-scale epistemological warfare.
Yes.
Because when you break down convention, when you break down convention, you have no basis for deciding what's true anymore. But what they're doing, and they don't realize it, is at the very moment they want to roll out all of this wonderful digital culture stuff, they are undermining the very basis of it, because they're really saying that none of these platforms are trustworthy.
Right.
Trust your neighbor that you're having the conversation with over coffee in the kitchen. That's what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. This is all, it's really incredible, because we're starting to come at it and look at it one step back. I mean, you go one step back, the picture is very, very unusual. One of the strange things, and of course, even before the election, daily things were picking up in an odd way. And it was almost like every day things were different, you know, in such a bizarre fashion. One of the things that caught me during the run-up to the inauguration of the Biden administration is what you said, and you mentioned it in relation to Q, but it came out in these strange ways. And I'll mention it here. People who are familiar with the alternative media side will understand and appreciate some of these people. And I'm only pointing them out because I think it's interesting. It seems to me like they were all getting the same phony intel, the kind of junk conspiracy. And here's how it went. We had figures coming out of the blue, like Simon Parks, who, you know, is this kind of marginal figure over there in the UK who does some alternative stuff about aliens. And suddenly he was speaking authoritatively about having this information that Trump was going to be sworn in. Everything was okay. The plan was steady, all this kind of stuff. Then the Steve Pachenik type stuff, the former CIA intel guy talking to an Alex Jones type guy, coming on there and just flatly stating, I will stake my career and reputation that Trump is going to be sworn in. There will not be a Biden administration, all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these people on different sets of the spectrum allow themselves to be, fall on their own sword with these predictions, because they apparently thought that they were getting direct intel or whatever that misinformation machine was still pushing that right to the last minute. And as you said, beyond the inauguration.
Yes.
What is that about?
I genuinely think that part of it is about keeping people addicted to inaction through hope porn.
Right.
I really do. And it's another way, it's also looking to me like a classic intelligence dye the waters operation. In other words, you plant a bit of information that is so-called insider information, and you track where it goes. You track the network. You track the flow of the current by dyeing the waters and seeing how it behaves. I think part of it is literally mapping the connections that are out there, so that when they do try and shut it down, they know exactly where the crucial nodes are to strike.
Wow. It's a large-scale data mining operation mixed with hype.
Right.
Fascinating. Because I was exactly like you in my reaction to that. I was like, where is this coming from? You know, because I went very deeply in my reports leading up to the inauguration, showing where the legitimate court battles were over legitimate state counts and electors. And so there was a lot of that reporting. Even on the Trump side, the Bannon guys, they would do their show every day, and they'd be going down that road that's like a technical analysis. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say this, you know, things will turn here. And that there's no doubt what's interesting to recount is that on the 6th, what they were doing there at the time in the Senate was they were going over the voter fraud allegations. And all that got thrown out the window, and all anyone thinks about is the guy with the horns now. But it's interesting to me, and calls himself a super soldier, right? It's like they used that weird side of the alternative junk conspiracy side, and boom,
there it was. Exactly. To me, that's classic misinformation operation.
Right.
Disinformatsiya, as the Russians say. It's a classic KGB sort of operation. And the reason I'm mentioning that is we have to remember that besides the American deep state and intelligence community and, you know, the Bannons and the Clappers and the Pechenics and so on that have been involved in this mix, we've also got to remember there's other intelligence agencies out there that are very, very skilled in this sort of thing. So the disinformation part of it may not have even been coming from within the American deep state. It might have been coming from foreign actors or corporations. You know, who knows? Wow. They're all players in this.
It's quite a soup.
It's a soup.
Yeah. The Mossad definitely is. It's interesting to think about the types of disinformation programs that they have.
Sure.
And the Iranian intelligence arm, all of these things, I agree with you, could have totally been in play. There could have been a corporate experiment, yes.
The Vatican? You know, I used to tell my medieval history students that the oldest political chancery in the world in continuous operation is the Vatican.
Yeah.
That's quite a body of experience. And now we're hearing, you know, oh, there were Vatican satellites involved in the election steal, you know.
So, yes.
You know, it's everywhere. And, you know, to me, I used to tell George Ann Hughes that as Mr. Globaloney approaches the end game of getting his big global new world order set up, watch the factions start fighting each other.
Yes.
Because they all want to be on top of that pyramid when the game is called.
Right. Wow. We saw some unusual and interesting faces, like Sidney Powell, who I pointed out had a direct connection to the JFK assassination investigation in the 70s.
Yep.
And her cases against Dominion and all that, they keep going around trying to sue people for $1.3 billion. We need to figure out what's going on with that figure, too. Dominion's first response to all this was to get their Denver office, pack it up, and get the hell out of there. Patrick Byrne, the former CEO of Overstock, he was out there a lot and presenting things. It's almost like there were people who understood, you know, what was happening in the background, and there needed to be some sort of public conduit for this. And so we started seeing these very interesting figures who were not usually associated with the political scene show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's going to increase. We're going to see. My prediction is, Daniel, since you've mentioned all of these people that have come out of the woodwork, my prediction is we're going to see a lot more coming out of the woodwork in the next few weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, we really are. I mean, stop and consider. We had that raid in Germany of servers.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
How much of that has come out yet? Very little.
Practically nothing.
Practically nothing. That's going to come out.
Yes.
And I strongly suspect you're going to see, again, this is part of the geopolitical fallout here. I strongly suspect you're going to see other countries and their media start breaking some of this stuff.
Right.
Why? I go back to the Baghdad Museum looting. Who broke the story?
Who
broke that story? Der Spiegel.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't American media.
Yeah,
our good friends and loyal ally, the Germans, broke that one. You know, so I'm just waiting for it to happen.
It was a Lebanese newspaper that broke Iran-Contra.
Yep. That's right.
You're absolutely right, which is just because you control the media here, it doesn't mean it's not going to get out.
Think RT.
This is absolutely amazing. And it's fascinating to me because you've been pointing out the international side deeply. I think you go in on the international dynamics, Germany, Russia, China, and go very deep on that. What we have to be careful of, I mean, it was an election year, so we were all thinking America, America. And certainly the action on the ground is American. But these forces around the entire thing, it's almost like a number of people were looking at America as a very tasty pie that they wanted to chop into different parts. Mm-hmm. And that's why you get all these strange things in this election, which has not existed in other elections. And I've tracked other elections and gone back and read about them for years. The dynamics of this one were completely bizarre.
They're off the chart bizarre because there's clear indication of foreign influence in the steel, but it's coming from the most unlikely of places. It's not Vladimir Putin.
Right.
It's Italy. It's the Vatican. You know, all of obviously the Chinese. It's all of these other players out there. And to me, this is the other geopolitical fallout that people really better wrap their heads around. They would not be taking such action if they had not concluded that the American empire is in its death throes.
Uh-uh.
They would not have been so bold had they not concluded this. And again, like I say, the results of this election are going to ripple for a long, long time.
Yes. Well, it's fascinating because the Empire faction has been in charge so long. And then when Trump got in, it was kind of a Kerrang! Mm-hmm. on that because he's doing the Fortress America thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say he pretended, but he gave voice to the empire thing, but not much. Not the way Obama and Bush did.
Right.
Obama and Bush went in there and were like, we're going to bomb everything that we want and take over, you know, this resource and try to get Syria out of there and all the rest. When Trump comes in, we start to look again at the thing that we've talked about, which is different factions in that deep state, and he's the America First deep state faction, which is a small faction, which, as far as I can tell from the work of Professor Scott and others, comes kind of out of the 40s, 50s manufacturing money.
Right.
And the mafia is certainly involved. The patriotism that's associated with that group still recognizes certain things like the Constitution. They're not big into overthrowing America for Marxist purposes. It's not where they're coming from.
Right, right.
This other thing, what is the other thing? Let's describe what's come in.
Well, let me back up to the deep state factions around President Trump. And I pushed that hypothesis, you know, in the run-up to the 2016 election and held to it right up until the COVID thing, when I began to look at Trump's appointments much more carefully and so on and so forth. And I now am toying with the idea that I may and probably was 100% wrong on some sort of deep state faction behind Trump, because his appointments made, especially when he appointed William Barr.
Yeah.
That made no sense to me, because if you've been in this alternative field of research for a long time, you will know that William Barr has some very, very murky connections to all of that MENA Arkansas operation that was being run when President Clinton was governor of that state. way back, you know, during the Reagan era.
Yes.
And that appointment just mystified me. And it looks to me like if there was a faction behind Trump, it was on too narrow of a front. In other words, there were not enough heavy players involved. And then, of course, he caved in and got rid of General Flynn.
Right.
Which I think was a huge, huge mistake in retrospect. So I have to wonder. But then, like you say, he did all of these strange things in the final days of his administration that we've never seen a president in the final days of office doing the things he did.
Absolutely.
And you have to wonder why. Was he just trying to gum up the works for the incoming administration? You know, what was going on with this? And then we had this crazy virtual inauguration with nobody there. Except the National Guard that has walled off the whole government compound in D.C. with razor wire, which is pointing inward, you know. If this is about keeping people out, why that? You know, everything is just totally upside down about all of this. But I do have to wonder. But now the incoming administration, I'm looking at it as kind of a twofold phenomenon. In that we see all of these Marxist platforms and policies that they want to implement, you know, immediately throwing 70,000 people out of work in the Keystone Pipeline and, you know, oh, you can get another job. You know, well, there's real compassion for you. It's just craziness. So you've got that component. But I also think that the major thing behind Biden is Mr. Globalone.
Yes.
They want to get whatever schedule they were on, thinking that they were going to get Darth Hillary into the White House. They want to get back on that schedule, and they're going to accelerate the process because they're behind 4 years of whatever schedule they were on.
Right.
And hence, you know, the domestic terrorism thing and all of that stuff. And the re-education camps for Trump supporters. And
Yeah.
I'll see you in the camp, Daniel.
But I know, yes. I'll bring the coffee. You can bring the cigarettes.
If we're allowed to have any. These people are also anti-smoking fascists. You've got to remember that. Right. So.
It is very fascinating to look at how the election would have gone in a real world scenario. You've got a president being reelected, coming into reelection with high economic numbers, the accomplishment of not getting into foreign wars, basically keeping his promises on things like the wall. Mm-hmm. And immigration. Mm-hmm. And in general, aside from, you know, sniping with staff and things like that, holding some kind of a regular decorum with foreign leaders and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing there. There was no big scandal that was going to take him down. And real polling coming into that election, especially after the disastrous Democratic nominating process, looked like a Reagan-Mondale-type matchup. It looked like it was going to be a blowout.
Right, right.
Pretty major proportions. It looked kind of 60-40 going in.
In fact, I'm one of those that thinks that in reality it was a blowout.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I don't think you can be a rational person and conclude otherwise. Which tells us how far down we've come, that there are so many people believing the narrative that, yeah, you know, all of these claims are just fraudulent. They're baseless, blah, blah, blah. That's not happening. It's almost as if it's been deliberately designed to produce a real division in the country, more or less along party lines.
Right.
Which is again, you know, part of me is thinking that, okay, if you've got all of these liabilities in the pension funds and so on, and you're trying to walk away from them, what better thing to do than to promote secession movements? And I mean, the secession chatter on the internet right now is off the charts.
Right.
It's off the charts.
And it's interesting because those are genuine feelings, but it's being manipulated and they don't even realize it.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I watched, I mentioned this in the wrap up with Catherine Fitz. I was watching a video about a week before we did the wrap up. So it's been about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. I was watching Glenn Beck on YouTube talking about this referendum that a legislator in Texas is wanting the people of Texas to vote on. Would you favor Texas independence? It's not a bill of secession. It's just a referendum. And Beck made the comment, you know, that there's lots of people out there that say that you can't secede, blah, blah, blah. That was settled in the Civil War and blah, blah, blah. And his response to that was, the Union is not a suicide pact. And he's right. It's not.
Wow.
It's not a suicide pact.
Right.
So, you know, this chatter is also off the charts. And I have to wonder, when you couple all of this sudden flowering of secession movements and so on in the last few years, it really began under Obama. But in watching this explosion of it over the past few weeks, I have to wonder if this isn't being coordinated with all these other moves that you and I have talked about previously in this interview. You know, moving NASDAQ and so on and so forth, and several major financial houses leaving New York for Florida.
Wow. Yeah.
There's something else going on here, and some of the corporate people are aware of it and taking steps now.
Fascinating.
You know, it is fascinating. It's a very, very dangerous time we're living in.
Joseph, absolutely fascinating. Hang in there, and we'll do part two with some amazing twists in space and Earth changes down here. Of course, you can find Joseph's work at GizaDeathStar.com, and be sure to go to DarkJournalist.com to sign up for our newsletter to get episodes delivered directly to your inbox. See you soon.